Welcome to this podcast from VCP 2014, the Vital Church Planting Conference. The conference is held in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, every year and brings together church planting leaders from across Canada. It is co-sponsored by the Anglican Diocese of Toronto and the Wycliffe College Institute of Evangelism, which is closely connected with Fresh Expressions Canada. We hope you enjoy this podcast. For more information on the conference and how you can register for the next Vital Church Planting Conference, please visit www.vitalchurchplanting.com.
Well, hi everyone. Welcome. My name is Joe. Glad you came to my session. I do recognize that it is 2:04 p.m. and that energy is going this way and snow is going this way and your watches are going the other way. So what I'd like to do with you over the next little bit is to create some space to talk about church and the arts. And I want to talk about it in terms of imagination. I want to talk about sharing ideas. And I want to talk about art in the context of being witnesses. C.S. Lewis once said that what the church needs is not better arguments, but better metaphors. So I want to spend some time over the next 30 or 40 minutes talking about metaphors. And I want to open a can of worms for you a little bit here. I'm going to throw out to you 20 real-time metaphors for God. These are 20 metaphors that I've written and that they've been illustrated, half of them at least, by friends of mine and were included in a book that we published a year ago. So I'm going to throw out these 20 metaphors, one after the other, and I want you to take note. Take note of the ones that make you feel good, the ones that make you scratch your head, and the ones that offend you. Because there might be one, maybe two in there that rub you the wrong way. And then I want to start to unpack a little bit the idea of what it means to be a witness through the arts, through things that cause us to think, things that resonate with us, and for things that rub us the wrong way. Is that good? Good to go? And we'll have some questions in the middle and then maybe towards the end as well, if we have time. So here we go. God is a gambler. He is in on every hand we play, win or lose, good or evil. He risks all for the sake of our freedom. But God is also a cosigner. He bears the responsibility of the inevitable default on our payment and promises, and the bank knows he's good for it. God is a crook, and he dies like a crook to prove it. He steals the sin that is ours and refuses to reveal its whereabouts, lest we attempt to reclaim it. God is an alarm clock. Jesus spent the 3 days of his death waking those who had fallen asleep to the new day of his reign. The snooze bar of sin has been disabled, and the alarm has been going off ever since. God is a squatter. He inhabits conflict and makes all the disasters of our histories the sacraments of his saving presence. God is a centerfold. At the incarnation, he is exposed, adored, and violated. The money shot, cross, not crotch, where blood best semen. God is a body snatcher. Looting the graves of the living, God unearths our true humanity and buries himself in our place. Funeral industry, beware. But God is also an iron worker. He bids us to beat our swords into plowshares and our spears into pruning hooks. Warriors into gardeners is his aim. God is a self-experimenter. The great physician infects himself with the poison to become the cure. Evil is taken out as it is taken in. God is a cheater. He passed the winning card under the table of his death for all to see. The game is fixed, and so are we. God is a DJ, mashing our original tunes one and two the next. He spins a new song. Tempos and tirades, style and sleaze are of no challenge. The bass track of his redemption unites them all. God is a dealer, pushing hope at the intersections of our souls and our neighborhoods. He reclaims lost territory from the death dealers, and he legalizes peace. But God is also left-handed, tying his right hand power via military, political, economical might behind his back. He uses his left, subtle, hidden, paradoxical power hand to bring about good for everyone. God is a liquidator. Less is divinely more, as generosity begets generosity. Gain through loss, life via death, pay it forward and backwards. Grace undercuts entitlement, and the tab is on the Lord's house. And God is a fashion designer. He invites us to clothe ourselves in his best pieces: compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, peace, and forgiveness. The world is his catwalk. We are his models. God is also a stagehand. He works behind the curtain, setting up scenery, lights, sound, props, and special effects. Vital yet often overlooked, he is at his best when unnoticed. He is at the service of the story, and his joy is found in the actors, regardless of their performance. But God is also a landlady. She owns the building we live in and is responsible for repairs and property maintenance. As her long-term leasers, it is in our contract to keep it clean and safe, that is, to live in unity with the soil, with each other, and with the landlady. But God is also a close talker. He is most often heard in whispers, causing us to lean in and draw close. And while some have taken to yell on his behalf, it has only caused others to cover their ears. Silence becomes a right as we become deaf to competing voices. God is a master of disguises. Recently, he has been seen as a starved foreigner who lacks health care and is a felon, likely on charges of public nudity. And he will often camouflage himself amongst those we fear and hate most in an effort to help us sort out our own identities. God is unethical. He lets liars, murderers, and molesters off the hook, and even those who feel their infractions are less detestable are allowed to go free. He insists that no one gets what they deserve. So the 20 metaphors, I want to find out soon which ones you love, which ones make you think, which ones you hate, again, are this: God is a gambler, God is a cosigner, God is a crook, God is an alarm clock, God is a squatter, God is a centerfold, God is a body snatcher, God is an iron worker, God is a self-experimenter, God is a cheater, God is a DJ, God is a dealer, God is left-handed, God is a liquidator, God is a fashion designer, God is a stagehand, but he's also a landlady, a close talker, a master of disguises, and at the end of it all, God is unethical. So, thoughts, feedback, pushback, as it comes to us to be witnesses, to frame our knowledge of God through the arts, through metaphor. Which one of these work for you? Which one of these make you scratch your head? And which one of these make you feel like you chose the wrong breakout session this afternoon? Anyone? Yes?
I like the landlady.
How come?
A couple of them, but the landlady I like best.
Why is that? So it worried you there, the cosigner?
I liked it, yeah. But I just thought that there was maybe that. The reason I liked the landlady better was because I thought the cosigner was maybe a little relying on it. Like,
okay.
It was nice to know it was there, but
okay.
It was dangerous.
Fair enough. Excellent. Excellent observations. Somebody else? Yes?
What do you mean by God is an iron worker?
I pulled that one from the Psalms. And I forget which psalm it is specifically, but I think I have it labeled there. Maybe I don't have it labeled there. Do a Google search. Do you know the citation for that one? swords into plowshare. So he's an iron worker that's going to take us away from fighting towards peace. That was my point. Hold on, I'm going to quickly skip back to the bottom ones. Anybody else? Ones that you like, ones that rub you the wrong way. Yes, sir. Oh, sorry. Go ahead here and then up top. Go for it.
The picture that went with the DJ.
That one there? Why is that?
Because the DJ is Christ.
He is Christ. Yeah, so I had a friend of mine actually design that for me. She is actually an artist who works in caustics. So this one was originally made in beeswax, and there's layers of paper and ink and foil, and she put those all together, and she actually gave it to me as a gift, so you can actually touch it. And where the holes are in his hands, there's actually divots in the picture, and I have it hanging in my office, and before I head out to preach on Sunday mornings, I drop my fingers into the hole just to remind myself who I'm doing this for.
I wonder what it says on the
record. Oh, I forget. One's a remix, one's mixed up. They were song titles that meant something to her in regards to God's redemption of all things. Yeah. Up top. Okay.
There being in the thing that is most ugly or most offensive, yep. There is a way that God can picture God's self, where even the unethical mm-hmm. can have a sense of redemption. And I'm reminded of all Saints Outreach Ministry.
Yep. Yep.
I just think that when you do that, when you turn it upside down, mm-hmm. it's just so healing.
Okay. So there's that sense where God resonates, or he knows, he feels your pain, and he's able to redeem even the darkest of things. Okay. Wonderful. One, then two. Go ahead.
It's always surprising to me to find a lack of common in the commentaries when Jesus said, like, I'm like a thief in the night.
Yeah.
He calls himself a thief.
That's right.
And just to live with that metaphor, I mean, how is he a thief?
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. Could you imagine a stained glass window of like the Hamburglar? You know, Jesus' Hamburglar, the bag, dollar signs getting out. Yeah, we don't talk about it that way because it's a little bit uncomfortable. Right? I know. Yes, at the back.
I like the two guys, the gambler guy.
Yes. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome. It's a good picture. Thanks for sharing that. Okay.
And I like it because it brings back to me something I don't like about when I think about Jesus.
Yep.
Which, when I read stories and think about, I wonder if, had I been around or had Jesus been around now, if I would ever be in the same place.
Totally.
Yeah. And I like that.
My wife, when I put that one down and she said, this is terrible. You cannot share this with anybody because it feels dirty to me. I said, yeah, it feels dirty. I feel like I want it to feel dirty. Because think about it. You know, God himself comes to earth and is naked. He is violated. God himself goes through puberty. God himself has bouts of diarrhea. This doesn't make any sense to me that he would expose himself to that. Yet I feel like he wants us to be pulled into that pain with him. At least that's the way that I feel it. Others. What's working for you? What's not?
Well, part of this could be because I have a background in theater.
Yep.
Whereas God is a stagehand.
Yeah.
It works best when you don't know he's there. But I'd like
Absolutely. Okay, that's better. I'm gonna change that for the next time. Very good. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Okay.
And the reason I picked the one I did was because it was one that kind of worked most comprehensively, but I think you could use all 20 of them together.
Okay. Did you pick that one too because it's she's a lady?
Oh, no, sorry. The one I picked, the landlady one, was just because it was involving.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
If you took away from that, I think you could use all 20 of them together.
Totally.
Really.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. You guys are way too nice. Aren't there others? There's some there. Okay, you're ready to go. Let me have it.
A fashion designer,
yes? Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, I'll go there.
Yeah. Why? Tell me, why don't you like that one? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I explained a little bit here, but you know when you, I'll go back to it real quick. Let me go back to it. Maybe I can unpack it that way best. Give me one sec. So God's centerfold at the incarnation, he is exposed, adored, and violated. The money shot, cross, not crotch, with blood, best semen. So at the incarnation, he is exposed. So there's exposure when you look at a human being in that way and you commodify them and they're just naked in front of you. There's something about that. But in a way, I feel God has done that to himself on our behalf. He is adored. There's something about when you look at an image in that sort of erotic way that you something chemically happens into your body and you're drawn to it. I think the same way with Christ, there's a chemical reaction, and then he is violated. Again, you know, you're commodifying that person, you're just using them, and then you're throwing that image away, and you're moving to somewhere else. Violated, I would say Christ is violated on the cross. He is violated as he is beat down. He is violated as he is killed. And then the money shot, to use kind of like a dirty term, that's, you know, used in that sort of field. So that is, you know, that sort of climax of like the film or the image, it's cross and not crotch, because usually in a provocative pornographic film, it's crotch, but no, for us as Christians, it's the cross. And blood is the liquid that, you know, that spills out of Jesus' veins, and that's more important than semen or any other sexual excretion. So I'm trying to pull the spiritual and the physical together and then pull those two ideas of this violation of humanity and the violation of God in a way as he comes and dies and then rises again. So that's what I meant. Yeah.
Have you ever shared that with anyone who's involved in?
No.
Like
I've had surface conversations, but I've never been in a deep relationship with someone where I've unpacked it that way. Yep. Yeah. A couple more thoughts before we move on? Yeah.
Just a general observation. A few of them, including this one.
Yep.
I appreciate that. I'm not saying it's comfortable or pleasant.
Yep.
But it's important to be jarred out of my own talking about God.
Yep. Excellent. I'm happy to hear that.
I'm saying those would make cool advertisements on the side of the bus.
Yeah? They would be provocative because we always sell Jesus as, you know, like the pretty white guy with rosy cheeks and red lips, right? I think someone tweeted today that I saw and said, Jesus' greatest miracle was being a white guy in the Middle East. Like, I thought that was hilarious. Yeah, maybe it is. But you're right. You're right. Last call? Yeah. Yep.
The metaphor distracts. I feel like you're ending up with something that shocked you more than you think.
Okay.
That's, I feel like you're going back to it, going, everything else I love, and then that one just not being like, all I can think about is actually semen, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
The word, it stays with me.
But what about the actual incarnation where Jesus' human body produced semen, produced sweat, went through puberty, had acne? Maybe hair on his back. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it brings it, to me, it brings it to earth. So is that too close to earth?
I don't know if it's too close. I think it's not the
Okay. Okay, so it's desensitized you and you can't even read the rest because you can't even get beyond those first three words necessarily. Okay. Last call before we move on. Somebody else has something else to say? Okay, quick quote by theologian Stanley Hauerwas. And this wasn't written in any book, but he sort of said it offhand in the conference I heard him once say. He says that, what has captured our imagination? When was the last time that you saw a movie on peace? So when we think about our world, when we think about our culture, the things that we focus on, the things that we entertain ourselves with, if I look through my son's, you know, video game collection, we don't let him have, you know, fighting and war games, but there's nothing in there about, hey, peace. And these aren't the stories that stir us. If you go to the movies right now, where the action is, the summer blockbusters are the crash and bang, not stories of peace. So I wonder for us, as we create new metaphors, real-time metaphors, of who God is and how he connects to our culture and our society, as we do that through art, I wonder for us if part of our deal is to recapture imaginations and turn them and focus them and adjust them in a different way towards imaginations that unpack systems that oppress and devalue, imaginations that subvert evil and lead to superior alternatives, imaginations that grant us permission to ask all the hard questions but not be penalized for it. And perhaps to give us insight into our world and beyond. Callie Lassen, who is the editor of a small Canadian magazine called Adbusters, I don't think he's a Christ follower, but he captured it really well when he said this. He said, dreams by definition are supposed to be unique and imaginative. Yet the bulk of the population is dreaming the same dream. It's a dream of wealth and power, fame, plenty of sex, and exciting recreational opportunities. What does it mean when a whole culture dreams the same dreams? And I think part of our role as church leaders, as priests, as pastors who are trying new initiatives is to help people recapture what a holy dream looks like. What it means to have a life that has a disposition towards things that are towards God's redemption, to what he's actually doing in the world, things that are good, things that are right. Because we all know, and I find myself in this description as well, I find my dreams being captured by other things, my imagination being focused in other directions. And I believe that part of our roles as pastors, leaders, artists perhaps, is to help recapture dreams and imaginations towards things that lead to God's redemption. So, question to you. Where do you think the imagination of the church, the local church, is needed most? So we can talk about these things, we can look at examples that stir us, but in your settings or in your place or how you observe the church in Canada, where do you think our imagination, where do you think our dreams are needed most?
Can you unpack the question more?
Yeah. So we spend an awful lot of time figuring out what we do ministry-wise. We spend an awful lot of time focusing in, especially on our weekend, let's say, services to help shape people's minds and hearts. We put our budgets and our programming together dependent on where we want to bring people. So if we were going to stoke the imagination of our folk in our congregations to spin out into their context, into their workplace, with their families, how can we shape those imaginations? And where do you think the imagination of Christ, if I can say it that way, is needed most in our context today?
I would say
yep.
that it is building relationship with the other. I remember once going to the leadership conference and hearing a bishop say to me about the future of leadership in the church, talking about whenever you get people in a room that are meant to be in a room together, God happens.
Huh. Okay, so if you weren't able to hear that, just getting people in the same room together who shouldn't be in the same room together, that's stoking their imagination. Okay. Yeah, one then two.
We never times I hear catchphrases used
Are they just dead to you because they've been so overused? Okay. Crank another one out? Yeah. Okay. So then where do you hope? Give us a sense of hope. So where do we need to see that imagination then? Have you been reading my notes? Because my next main session, I'm going to hit those things. Thanks. Thanks for just taking the air out of my balloon. But you're right. But you're right. We sort of stopped at some point. We were on the cusp. We were doing these things. This was speaking into our culture. And now we've retreated into left behind movies. Right? Somebody else. Okay, sorry. It was one there, two, and then three. Go for it.
I don't know about the word
ghost. Yep. Yes.
At the board table, they're still very enamored with the dream of 1992 at St. Paul's and United Church in Milton. And so even if they get excited about, in worship, a metaphor of any of those things from Christ with all the goals, goes, decisions 2 days later at church council meeting on Monday night show that the real dream that fuels and that motivates is
right. So maybe you need to take their imagination out of the past and into the present. Oh, okay. So actually doing something about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not complaining. We got one, two, and then you, just to go in order. Go for it.
I think something that our culture needs.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
New and creative and brave and vulnerable way.
Mm-hmm.
That is in partnership with the world around us as we kind of explore those questions.
Yeah.
Because our imagining of that, using our imagination to think through that question, requires us to move to hope.
Totally.
So it's those two things, right?
Yeah. And I think part of that too is all actually like walking with people like that, because sometimes we come off as Christians that when you're a Christian, life is amazing. It's so great. You should join us. Like Jesus makes your teeth brighter and your hair shinier and do it. I'm thinking of actually doing a teaching series with my church next January in the Book of Lamentations, and I want to call it Everything is Terrible. Because we have a Christian history. It's not great all the time. And we need to tell the other side of that story what it means to be faithful in those times. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. One, two, and then maybe one over there. Go ahead. That wasn't you? You were just scratching your eye? All right. Okay. Go ahead. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yep. So yeah, so maybe you're right. So maybe there's an overarching one that calls the church to be at play in the world, and then there's other ones that are more pocket. So if you're in Toronto and you're in Montreal and I'm wherever else, the vision for the bigger picture. Okay. Understood. One more and then we're going to move on. Go for it. To multicultural, okay?
I mean, bringing that to the superculture.
Right.
Culture to multicultural to culture. I think that should be the appropriation. I can give you an example that someone mentioned about the storytelling.
Yes.
Each period contributed, and she mentioned about wanting to understand how. In India, in the 19th century, Reverend Sheshad, Narayan Sheshad, he wrote the church paper saying we need to Sanskritize individual.
Sure.
And he gave a whole list of reasons. And the Anglican liturgy Sanskritized, the entire liturgy. It was meant for that time because new believers were coming in.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Sure. Yeah. So there's a sense of adaptability and recognizing your context. Fair enough. That's excellent. That's an excellent point. Keep that in mind because that's going to come into play here in a little bit. I want to show you a few more examples of some of the things that have come out of our community that we planted, and you'll actually recognize a few of these pictures from a few years ago. But for us, one of the things we really wanted to capture the imagination of with people was with the Eucharist. And how could we get away from the same things or the same style, or for lack of a better word, get people just so locked up into the routine that they miss the point of it altogether. So we took our liberties, and I apologize, my Anglican friends, I know the Lord's Supper is up here with you guys. Please know I do this in full respect, then we can have some pushback on it. But we've tried it in different ways. We did a communion setting that we called the Defiant Imagination. And we had grabbed some farmer's barbed wire, and we just strung it into a crown of thorns, attached it to some fishing wire, hung it to the ceiling. I made these metal baskets, and I dyed some ice cubes red, and we put them in these baskets, and we put the crackers just below the crown on this beautiful white tablecloth. So as our church service started, you know, there was just these slow drips, and as the hour went on, they kept coming faster and faster, and by the end, it was just pouring, and everything was splattered. And we didn't even offer the cup necessarily, because as you can see there in the corner, there was enough of the juice that had spilled all over the elements. So we wanted to speak into our context and talk about the gravity of what had happened at the cross and what it means for us to have a defined imagination as Jesus did. Because if the cross at that time was used as this tool to subvert and to push down and make sure that Rome held its rule, Jesus took that and flipped it and now made it the tool for his redemption. So what would it mean for us to have a defined imagination and experience that at his table? We did another one here we call Good Reason to Throw a Party. So we got all these, you know, those really gross grocery store slab cakes, you know, that probably 95% plastic. They're one molecule away from being plastic. And we got all these things, and we put all the communion cups in them, and we dropped a 33 in the middle, Christ's birthday, you know, death at 33. And we attached this message or series of messages around the parable of the prodigal son. We talked about this idea of how sweet the taste of salvation is. And when we invited people to the table, we said, maybe you today you need just a pinch of this sweetness, but maybe you need a handful of it for others of you. So people would come to the table and just get like, they would go wrist deep into this cake and pull out as much as they could and the cup, because we wanted to capture this party idea that this son that was once lost has now been found, and now we throw a party for him because the family is back together again. We did a series on heaven and hell and earth, and we called it Intersections. We wanted to get away from this idea that heaven is this place that you might go to when you die, or hell is this other place that you might go to until you die, and they are faraway realities, and we'll figure that out at the end of our lives. We wanted to suggest that heaven and hell intersect earth daily. Heaven intersects earth when we are good, when we were kind, when we are patient, when we live as Jesus lived. But hell intersects earth when we don't show love, when there is pride, when there is brokenness. And we talked about our role as Christians as to be creative artists, part of God's redemption of all things. So as people came to take the elements, we invited them to grab paint and a paintbrush and to write something that would connect with how they felt they could bring heaven to earth, and the words are live, life, and I can't really read what that one says. Maybe that one just says new right there. And we wanted to bring this sense together. You have a part in this. And it's not for some faraway time where you got to wait for your turn, but in the here and now, how do we bring heaven to earth and not hell? Outside of our Sunday gatherings, the beauty of the context we found ourselves in, so we planted a church in downtown Sarnia, 75,000 people, a very blue-collar town, but we chose to land ourselves in sort of like the arts and culture district of the city. So every first Friday of the month, there would be an arts and culture event where all the stores would stay up late, and there was music and wine tastings and food, and when we had first moved in, we sort of observed. And then those who were actually on the planning committee got to know us and liked us and petitioned our name, our church, to the others on the committee and said, you got to have the church participate in this because these are cool guys and they're not going to proselytize. So it was amazing. We got invited to the table to participate. So we thought to ourselves, we have nothing to sell. We have nothing really to show off. We're not inviting people to come in into our storefront for a purpose. So we thought, how can we engage our community artistically? And one of the very first things that we did was this thing called the values experiment. So there was money bags sort of on both sides here, and on those signs there, where people could assign a value to something. How much would you pay to stay alive forever? How much would you pay to never have to do this again? And there was different things they could pay towards. They could put, you know, a dollar amount, drop it in the bag. We promised to put all the results on the website afterwards. But the beauty of it is that people would have to stop and think about it. How much would I pay to never have to work again? How much is that worth? How much is life worth to me? And what it did for us is that it allowed us to engage with conversations with people on the street with no other agenda than to say, hey, think about it. Think about how you would spend yourself. Another one that we did was called the Dropped Multi-Site Art Installation, Exploring Grounded Ideas from Above. So we actually got some wood pallets. And on the five pallets, we dropped an idea, something that we thought that our neighborhood had to think about, and we put them throughout the block. So there was one about food, talking about how we eat. There was one about hospitality. There was one about work with all the computers and hammers. There was one about taking care and stewarding the earth. And the one at the bottom there, full of pillows, was about rest and Sabbath. And we didn't use the church language that would perhaps alienate or just go over people's heads. But we talked about these concepts as the scriptures talk about them, but in a sense that would connect and relate to people. And what was kind of neat, you can't really see it, but each of these pallets are tied to makeshift parachutes. So there's some white there at the back, and we sort of had rope going on them. So we wanted to capture this idea that these are sort of heavenly ideas. Rest, stewarding the earth, you know, looking after our schedules, looking after the way we take care of our planet. But we wanted to talk about it at a street level. This next one was part of an installation we did for one of our Christmas series. And I'm not sure, Sarnia is right on the border of Ontario and Michigan. So we would get like double the Christmas advertisements. So every day you're just pulling out so many flyers and so many things that, you know, to buy. So what we did was actually take just, you know, that's maybe a couple of days worth, and we stuck them to the wall. And the note we put on top of it was, please take the Christ out of Christmas now. Which is funny, because usually you're trying to keep the Christ in Christmas, but this is not the Christmas that I'm trying to keep. I'm trying to get Christ out of this Christmas. So how do we talk about that as a church? Architecturally, and I'm so jealous, you guys have the best stained glass windows. Like I said, yes, you have the best clothes. You get to wear the cool shirts and that kind of stuff. You have great architecture. We've got nothing. This sort of, you know, white bread, non-denominational, big box type church, nothing. So we thought to ourselves, what can we do to talk about who we are in a way that connects with our culture? So in the front door of the church, actually, we had this sticker put on, sacred space and community venues. So we wanted to know that people, our building space was a gift back to the neighborhood. So it was sacred space. This is a place where you can reflect and ask the hard questions, but this is also a community venue. So we would give, like I said in last night's session, keys away to the front door. And at one point, out of the 15 front door keys that we had, 10 of them belonged to people who weren't part of our worshiping community, because we wanted this to be common space for people to use it, most often free of charge, and other times maybe for $20 an hour, just to sort of keep the lights on. And it worked out well for us. And whether it was an art event that we were putting on, a class or a band practice. In fact, one woman was starting up her own design studio. She's a single mom, but she didn't have enough money to actually pay the rent in an actual storefront. So in our kids' space, she would sort of tear that down on Monday morning, set up her shop, and then tear that all down again for Sunday worship for us. And she was able to build up her business over 6 or 8 month period, enough to establish herself, and then finally rent a space on the block. And that was a beautiful way for us to give our space back to the community, and all through this artistic sign of, hey, this is a place for reflection, but also a place that we give back to the community. So, real quick, I want to hear some of your stories. Where have you seen the church and the arts flourish? Where have you seen a good blend, a good connection, things that are imaginative, things that are restorative, ideas that might stoke other ideas here this afternoon? Yeah? That's awesome. Other ideas that might inspire and encourage us? Yes?
We've had installation art in our church.
Yeah.
So for the first time we did it, one of the windows was suspended over the top of the pews.
Tell me about it.
Like a cross circle of wheat.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah?
He was playing
Bach. Okay, that's good.
And the most recent
one, the artist recorded
the choir members whistling bird songs. Recorded video. Yes. There were little monitors all around the church with these choir members whistling bird songs. So they were coming in and they'd all be on it. It sounded like they were in the woods.
That's amazing. And I just love that it was the choir members basically saying,
hey,
it's good. Really? Where are you?
See what's to come already.
Yeah.
in Toronto, by Dufferin and Dundas on Gladstone Avenue.
What's the church called?
It's called St. Anne's Anglican Church.
Okay. Wonderful. That's wonderful. And are pictures of that online for us to maybe see it? Okay. Yes. Thank you.
I have an example of where the arts and unintentionally church has flourished.
Okay.
And it was at the AGO.
All right.
And they had an art installation of Men and Boys of Soul for Ukraine over in England.
Mm-hmm.
Singing Thomas Tallis' Ben and Allie, which is a piece in 40 parts.
Yes.
And I was stunned because you walk
Beautiful.
But
what was happening
in the center
was
that people were
meditating. It's awesome.
Quiet, and
absolutely. It's awesome. Doesn't this jazz you up? This gets my fluids going. That's great. A couple more, yeah. Yep.
With Christ and who it is. And at the very end, he's got this loaf of bread in his pocket, and he pulls out and he starts ripping out the center of this bread. And then as he's kind of mumbling and talking, he hangs it on, he pours a bottle of wine into the center of it and hangs it on the microphone as the bread mushes and all of the wine spills out onto the floor. And that's the end of the play.
That's
and
wonderful.
To a stunned audience.
Subway Stations of the Cross. Write that down. I'm sure there's some on the internet. There's got to be something there for there.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. Really. Okay. Sure.
And in order to be able to start their own small business, and we showcase them. And,
perfect.
And it becomes integral to addressing an issue of hunger.
Perfect.
And we partnered with an access capital group that actually provided small microloans to these artists to help them start their own business.
Amazing. Well, you're just using what you have.
Yeah.
So that's wonderful.
The other connection is we have a hair salon.
Yep.
That happens in our ministry from a woman who was isolated from Iran and lived in depression. And now she runs a hair salon in our ministry every Thursday where you can get a haircut for $5.
Excellent.
So come for a haircut for $5.
All right. Go ahead. Yep.
Sort of an old idea. We're using a labyrinth, but part of the reason we're using it was the immigrants don't come to chapel a lot. It's sort of the space that in these movements. So we're trying to get them in. So it's a labyrinth for meditation, but it's all the candles.
Yep. Awesome. Very good.
Yeah.
It's good. A couple more. One, then two. Go ahead.
Last lecture, my parents back in Vancouver.
Yeah.
I engaged with another seminary, and we did Stations of the Cross. So we did Stations of the Cross through the lens of Matthew. So we took the image that he did on one of the walls between Palestine and Israel, the wound.
Yes.
And we invited people from both the diocese, the community, and the local parish to write their lives in iconography related to a little vignette.
Very good.
To respond to what that meant to them, who they were, where they're coming from in that situation. And then counter to that, we also had artists doing little people in different perspectives, different forms of prayer through different multi-faith backgrounds. And we stationed them in different places all over the church very intentionally. So we had one Muslim woman offering prayer in the baptistry, offering this image of Christ being crucified on this piece of cardboard.
Mm-hmm.
Walk through these journeys of Lent
So it
will. People engaging with stuff from all the community.
Yeah. Yeah, like this. Yeah.
And people came to like, I've never been in before. I never knew you guys were just in this school. And it was, you were really like in the space about it. Like,
yeah.
Things were rough. Things were weird. Things
yeah.
Were and people were like, I could actually see myself in that
picture. Awesome. Awesome. Last one. Did you have a last one?
I would have to say the church and arts intersecting through music constantly. I mean, what the church may call secular music.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, last one. Yeah, go for it. You're lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And it sounds like it is. It is happening. It is percolating. So a couple of last quotes, and then we'll close in prayer just because we're out of time here. But Abraham Joshua Heschel, so probably the top Jewish theologian, philosopher of the last 100 years, when speaking of witness of God, said this. He said, there are no proofs for the existence of God, only witnesses. And I feel like part of what we do, either to enable the arts or to create them, is to put these metaphors, these witnesses in place. Like you were saying before, that will connect people that are otherwise unconnected. And if I might be so bold, I would like to define witness here by saying, to be a witness is to be living proof that God has not given up on this world. And this is the truth, this is the goodness, this is the richness that we hold. And you're right, art, as for art's sake, there's part performance, but really at the end of the day, what it does is that it points people back to the fact that God has not given up. Whether it's subway stations of the cross, whether it's fine art, whether it's getting people into your church who have not ever been in, folks, you and I have the opportunity and the gifts and the resources and the people to do these kinds of things. So may I encourage you today to think of God in new metaphors, ones that resonate with you, ones that scratch your head, ones that perhaps jar you. May I encourage you this afternoon to stoke your imaginations and give permission to the imaginations of others who are in your church that will take this good news, this good witness, to places that are outside of your buildings. May I encourage you this afternoon to share your good ideas. Please don't hog them. Please don't sell them. Give them away for free. Do it. Let's help each other out. And at the end of the day, may we be reminded that all we do is to be witnesses. The real proof is to show others that God has not given up on us or on this world. Can I pray for you quick before we end this session? Is that cool? God, again, we come to you and say thank you, because you have given us so much to work with. Beauty and ideas and inks and oils and thoughts and music and notes. Oh, God, you've given us the most wonderful palette, the most wonderful toolbox to use to point others in your direction. So, God, I pray for my brothers and sisters who are here today. Give them new ideas. Give them bright ideas. God, help them to identify the people who are around them, who are artists, who have imaginations that you have been stoking, and help give them the strength and the courage to give these folk permission to do what it is that you have positioned them to do. And God, I pray for our contexts, to those that we are responsible for, to the people that we are reaching out to. God, open their eyes and their ears, their minds and hearts to these metaphors of who you are. This God who comes and hits planet Earth, writes himself into the story, and draws others to himself. God, we love you. Thanks for including us. And we do all these things for your glory. In your good name we pray. Amen. Thanks, friends. Have a good rest of the afternoon.
We hope you enjoy this podcast. For more information on the conference and how you can register for the next Vital Church Planting Conference, please visit www.vitalchurchplanting.com. www.thecoffeeclub.com.